Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. A wildfire north of Delta Junction has rekindled the over 8,000-acre South Fork Salcha Fire, was started by lightning June 8th in a remote area about 70 miles southeast of Fairbanks and has been allowed to burn. The Alaska Division of Forestry reports that rain had subdued the blaze until this week's warm, dry weather renewed activity. Forestry spokesman Tim Mowry says there are still pockets of unburned trees in the burn area.
Yesterday, we flew the fire and see it burning in a 100-acre or so patch of black spruce, and it did put up some smoke, and the wind was such that, southeast winds, Fairbanks caught a little whiff of smoke yesterday, and depending on the weather, if the weather conditions and the wind direction stays the same, that could be common here over the next few days if we don't get rain.
Mowry says recent warm, dry weather has made for wildfire-prone conditions across the eastern portion of the state.
Especially up north. We've got several fires burning on the north slope, all in limited suppression areas, but that's just an indication of how dry it is up there and, up in the Yukon Flats. And so people do need to be careful.
The Alaska Interagency Coordination Center reports three new fires in the eastern part of the state, including blazes in the Yukon-Charley Rivers National Preserve and in the Yukon Flats and Arctic National Wildlife Refuges. A 6,000-acre blaze in the Arctic Refuge is getting attention from firefighters who are working to protect area cabins and native land allotments. A funeral service is happening today in the village of Northway for a man shot by police in Fairbanks earlier this month. 21-year-old Matthew Colton Stover of Northway died in a shootout with FPD officers in a field next to the Fairbanks Correctional Center on June 19th. Police say Stover fired at the officers who had responded to the area after receiving a report of a masked man with a rifle in the parking lot of a nearby Denny's restaurant on Airport Way. Police say Stover was dressed in military-style armored clothing, had an assault rifle, a 9mm pistol, and hundreds of rounds of ammunition. Matthew Stover's mother, Diana Stover, says the incident was out of character for her son.
Never had hate in his heart, and he was always been taught that you work your problems out and that killing someone is definitely not an answer, and he knew that.
Diana Stover says Matthew grew up with her in Kansas but moved to Northway at 18 to live with his father's side of the family and had worked for Doyon Drilling on the North Slope for the last 3 years. She says she kept in regular contact with Matthew and that he was not involved in drugs, did not have any mental health issues, and was a happy person.
His friend told me the day before that he was in really good spirits, laughing, and nothing at all would have he saw that would have set him off.
Stover says she's heard of at least one person who witnessed the confrontation and offers a different account from that of police.
So this story the police are telling us, I don't buy it one bit at all. I think there's more to it, and we are going to request a look at surveillance cameras.
Diana Stover says there were cameras at FCC that may have captured the incident. Matthew Stover did not have a criminal record, and it's unclear if the jail somehow played into his actions. Fairbanks Police spokeswoman Yumi McCulloch says police have nothing additional to release about the case, but that an investigation continues.
Detectives are talking to family and friends and anybody who knows anything about Mr. Stover and what happened early that morning. So we're asking for the public to, if they know anything, to let us know. We are looking to talk to the gentleman or the woman that contacted the Denny's restaurant employee, who then in turn called 911, to get some more information from that person.
McCulloch says once the police investigation is complete, the State Office of Special Prosecutions will review it to determine if the actions of the four officers involved in the shooting were lawful. The officers have returned to duty. A new state-commissioned analysis of the U.S. Senate health care bill says it will lower Medicaid payments to the state by $3.1 billion over 6 years. That's an even bigger cut than in a bill passed by the U.S. House. Alaska Public Media reports that the report by Manat Health says 34,000 Alaskans now covered by Medicaid expansion could lose coverage after 2020, and that the state may have to make cuts elsewhere as well. This week, Senate leaders postponed a vote on the bill, but say they'll try again after the July 4th recess. The Urban Institute did its own analysis of the Senate bill. It says the legislation would leave 67,000 fewer Alaskans insured. Their liberal think tank says Medicaid cuts combined with lower support for people who buy their own health insurance would slash federal health care spending in Alaska by $643 million in 2022. As part of a national sit-in Wednesday to protest the Senate health care bill, a group of Fairbanks residents with disabilities met outside Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski's local office. KUAC's Robert Hannon reports.
Doug Tolley is Advocacy Director for Access Alaska in Fairbanks. The nonprofit agency helps those with disabilities achieve greater independence and control over their lives. He also suffers from multiple sclerosis. He was one of dozens of people who showed up at Senator Murkowski's office Wednesday to protest the Better Care Reconciliation Act.
It cuts taxes for the wealthy and reduces the deficit basically on the backs of using funds that were at one point used for supporting individuals with disabilities.
Tolley says the protesters achieved a cordial reception at the senator's office in Fairbanks. Their concerns were noted, but that polite reception didn't comfort him. He says he's worried by Murkowski's ambivalent reception to the bill.
We would like her to come out as a no, for one thing, as a model for her Republican colleagues. We believe this bill really isn't something that needs to be amended or changed. It just needs to be thrown out.
Karina Peterson is Senator Murkowski's communication director. She says the bill was only released last week, and it will take time for Senator Murkowski to sift through the details.
She doesn't have enough data and analysis about how the bill will impact Alaskans to make a decision on how she will vote on the bill.
Peterson says Murkowski has heard from many people about the health care plan, not all of them from Alaska. She says national ads have targeted Alaska's senior senator as a pivotal vote on the bill's success or failure. In Fairbanks, I'm Robert Hannon.
The Alaska Senate plans to reconvene in Juneau on July 10th to try to overhaul oil and gas tax credits. Alaska Public Media and KTOO report that it's not clear if there's room for compromise with the House, which has different goals. Neither chamber has held a voting session since it passed the state budget a week ago, but senators say they want to make changes to oil and gas taxes quickly, starting with ending the ability of companies to receive tax credits in the form of cash payments. The House wants to increase the amount that oil and gas companies pay in taxes. Anchorage Republican Senator Kathy Geisel, a nurse practitioner, says the change proposed by the Senate is more urgent than the House's proposal.
That's like a Band-Aid change. But the cash payments to oil companies, when the state itself is in deficit revenue, is actually urgent. It is the hemorrhaging.
Under the Senate plan, oil and gas companies would be able to reduce the amount they're liable to pay in taxes in the future rather than receive cash payments sooner. Geisel and other senators said yesterday that they want to have changes go into effect on Saturday, 6 months sooner than previously proposed. Anchorage Democratic Representative Garen Tarr says the Senate bill doesn't do enough.
We don't want to just change the name of the incentive program, but have it cost the same.
Senators also want to limit the tax benefits for spending money on an oil field to reduce the tax liability from the same field. Governor Bill Walker supports the change known as ring fencing. The trade group Alaska Oil and Gas Association expressed concern with both the ring fencing proposal and with the idea of moving up the end of tax credit cash payments. Walker added the oil and gas legislation, House Bill 111, to the special session that's scheduled to end July 15th. The legislature also hasn't passed a capital budget for the 12 months beginning tomorrow. Most lawmakers have returned to their home districts for the holiday weekend. I'm Dan Bross.